Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about our favorite Superman origin stories. You're of course known by our co-host, JD from Saskatoon.
Good evening.
Also with us is Red Ink.
What's up?
So yes, we're going to talk about our favorite Superman origins. I guess I'll start here. Well, I guess I'll say my favorite based simply because of... is it my favorite because of just familiarity or because it's based on the fact of what I saw and what really brought me in and what was trimming out the fat, really? I'd have to say my favorite would really be what Bruce Timm did with Superman the Animated Series, simply because it took the best elements from pre-crisis, post-crisis. It simplified
touch things. Of the Silver Age.
Touch of the Silver Age had some of the pulp action hero Jor-El. Touch of the sterile Krypton. It had the post crisis look. It had the infant Kal-El versus the birthing matrix. It had the Ma and Pa Kent that are still alive. It had a young Clark that, while he still had powers growing up, did not have full powers, did not have a career as Superboy, but had young adventures as a young Clark, including adventures with the Legion of Superheroes. It had enough of the stuff that I liked in all versions of Superman that pleased me. So it, I think that it worked for me overall. That is my favorite. If I had to pick a second favorite, it's not really the quote comic book Superman. It is, again, my favorite Superman story is Superman, secret identity. Red, your favorite Superman origin story.
Superman origin story? Well, simple. Yeah. It's a simple story, too. It's from All-Star Superman, Doomed Planet, Desperate Scientists, Last Hope, Kindly Couple, Superman.
That is one of the best ones, for sure. And it's kind of like, because we talked before about Supreme and Alan Moore's take on that and how that was like a love letter to, the golden and silver age, like, Kurt Swan era Superman. And I think that's what Grant Morrison was definitely going for with that. It's like he's just doing his own, sprinkling some of his own Grant Morrison-ness on it. But I don't think that story, and this is just me, I don't think that comic series would have rung true in terms of the origin and just overall everything if Morrison hadn't been working with Frank Quitely on that, because it's something about his art just seems to work so well with Morrison.
I like how it simplifies it down. Like, you don't go into Krypton being the Avatar fucking world where there's bugs that they fly around in and stupid shit like that. It's not a big crystal fucking planet where everybody looks like, where do we take a shit? Where do we dirty this fucking place? Like,
in a bowl of liquid crystals.
Like, one of the things that bugs me is when Krypton looks so fucking cold. And in that quick little bit that fucking Frank quietly draws, he actually establishes like the Golden Age Superman, or they look like the Golden Age Jor-El and the Golden Age Lara. And they don't look sterile to me. They look like just a weird fucking planet that you've never been to before. Like, how do you probably never understand these people if you lived with them? And like, there is a storyline in the fucking comics where you find out, yeah, Kryptonians are fucking weird. They don't like touching each other and shit like that.
my favorite origin, you know, oddly enough, to curtail off of what Red just said, my favorite origin story has always kind of been John Byrne's The Man of Steel miniseries from 1986. Like, first of all, it's John Byrne, I don't know necessarily at the height of his power, but it's definitely an era where he was firing on all cylinders with his art. It's one of the definitive looks of Superman for me. And like Red said, like, we get this, you know, sterile, no emotion having, it's like equilibrium, you know, there's no music, there's no poetry, there's no soul. But in that moment, as Jor-El and Laura send little Kal-El off to Earth, you know, he kind of reclaims that humanity. Is like, I finally know what this feeling is that I've held for you for years, ever since I first saw you. And it goes into, you know, Clark growing up and learning how to control his powers, and first going off into Metropolis, you know, or out into the world, and then to Metropolis, where he saves the space shuttle and he meets Lois for the first time, and, you know, eventually gets the costume. But my favorite part of that origin is where he goes back to the farm and he kind of has this breakdown and he doesn't know how to deal with people, because, you know, he went and did the right thing. He's making the proper use of his powers, but then all these people are like grabbing at him and shouting things and wanting him to do something. You know, it's the sage wisdom of his mom and dad that, you know, give him this compass to follow. And then we get that great suiting up scene, and, you know, Martha mentions, you know, when clothes are like really up close against you, they don't seem to get dirty or ripped or anything, which, you know, kind of a nod to how they kind of explain some of his superpowers in the comics. And we get one of my all-time favorite version of Lex Luthor is the purple sweatshirt with the green bandoliers across his chest from the Silver Age, but like a hair short of that is the 1980s Lex Luthor, like smoking on a cigar. He's this genius, this businessman. You know, he's got the kryptonite ring. Like, everything that I've ever loved about Superman came from like these three issues. And I mean, this is where I started reading Superman. It's my favorite era of Superman because of this origin.
A lot of people don't realize how important Martha Kent and Jonathan Kent are to Superman's origin and what makes him Superman.
Yeah. I mean, you got the classic Golden Age origin where, you know, the parent, like Ma and Pa Kent, were dead before he ever really left Smallville. And then he goes off to become Superman of the Golden Age. Or, you know, I forget if the Silver Age origin, if they were still alive or if they had also died.
Silver Age. Pa was definitely already dead in the Silver Age. I'm not sure if Ma was still kicking. Because I know in the Donner film, Ma was still alive in the Donner film. Go ahead, Red.
This may sound morbid, and I've brought it up before, and I always think it's an important lesson for Superman. As much as I like Jonathan Kent, Superman needs the lesson that he cannot save everyone. And having Jonathan Kent is an important lesson, like having him die of a heart attack, something Superman cannot fix, Superman cannot write.
As long as it's not him being torn apart in a tornado.
Yeah.
And no, I wouldn't really... Sorry, you go, Red.
I was about to say, no one vulnerable, son. Don't save me.
And if there's ever a moment for Superman to, you know, disrespect his father, that was it. And you talk about Jonathan Kent dying. I, as much as I love like that from 86 till the new 52, and that's largely where I've read Superman comics, where Jonathan Kent had the heart attack about the same time that his son died during, you know, the death of Superman. I honestly thought it was going to end reading. I remember reading as a kid, I thought they were going to actually kill, you know, Pa Kent and leave him dead. And then they, you know, he survives the heart attack, and, you know, they intimate that he somehow prevented his son's soul from crossing over. And then we got the form. I, as far as impactful death of Jonathan Kent in Superman's origin, Superman the movie, like, and it kind of goes to what you're saying, right, about, you know, he right there, the Christopher Reeve Superman learns that he can't save everybody, because, and he was like, what, 20 feet, 30 feet away from his dad, and he couldn't move fast enough to save him then. And then they repeat that lesson with Lois at the end of the film with the whole time travel thing. But as far as Jonathan Kent and the origins, you talk about his dad. Do you guys remember that his dad in the animated series was voiced by Shooter McGavin?
I do remember that, yes.
Yeah, like Jor-El was Christopher McDonald. I always loved that. And that, you know, when you talk about his father's, like, that Jor-El, more not before that and not until the Russell Crowe in the Krypton, where they're all, I always thought that was kind of dumb too, right, where they're flying around in giant dragonflies and shit. Before that, Jor-El never had, and in the comics or anywhere really, Jor-El never had an impact the way TAS Jor-El did in his son's origin, like trying to stop Brainiac or warn the people of Krypton. And then finally he's like, fuck it, I'm going to send my son off in this rocket to this world where he'll at least have a chance.
Well, that's not entirely true. People have tried to give Jor-El an impact. Like, even John Byrne tried. Jor-El sent a hologram of himself in John Byrne's Man of Steel, where Jor-El tried to force Clark to have the Kryptonian way of thinking, and Jonathan Kent hit hologram Jor-El with a shovel.
Yeah, that worked out so well.
It actually did. You're giving a lit.
I don't know if he was really forcing any Kryptonian culture on him there.
He fucking did because Clark says, I know the ancient songs of Krypton, but it has no meaning to me because Jonathan Kent fucking whacked the hologram with a shovel.
Okay, but I misunderstood the way you were, what you meant by that, because I thought it was, you know, it's like later on in the John Byrne era Superman, where Superman comes across this alien priest and he gives him the Eradicator, and, you know, the Eradicator, and it's a storyline called The Kryptonian Man, where the Eradicator forcibly turns Clark into an ideal Kryptonian.
I'm talking about the
Hulk. Yeah, no, in the Man of Steel, no, I misunderstood what you're saying. Yeah,
no, I'm talking about the... No, it fried the shovel. Jonathan Kent was pretty upset because that was his favorite shovel. But Jeff Johns tried really hard to do some stuff with fucking Krypton. Like, there was a 5-year period where Jeff Johns tried very clumsily to do 3 to 4 retcons of Superman's origin. Like, he tried to be like, oh, no, the Silver Age origin is back. Because he tried to be like, no, wait, the Krypton wasn't sterile. It was the Silver Age Krypton. I just made all these artifacts to make you think that it was sterile, to make you not miss the homeworld, because if you found out that Krypton was like this awesome fucking Silver Age Krypton, you've been really sad. And then Superman goes back in time with Lois to Silver Age Krypton, but then turns out, no, wait, that was Jor-El's dream.
Yeah, that wasn't Jeff Johns, though, because I think that was
No, you're right. I'm getting the Jeffs confused. That was Jeff Loeb. You're right. I'm sorry, Jeff Johns. You're not a total hack. That was Jeff Loeb.
Mark it down, Red. He said it.
The two hack Jeffs I confuse all the time.
Yeah, don't you mean one who's kind of a hack and the other one who's now a confirmed racist?
What?
Jeff Loeb, like that bullshit that like the hand was supposed to have like a considerably more, a larger impact and role in the first season of Daredevil, and Jeff Loeb kind of, nah, that we don't need to worry about them.
So that makes them a racist?
Well, it's some very more slightly more explicit dialogue, but you know that.
Okay, I'm just going to.
If not in, anyway, back to Superman.
Okay, okay. Return to Krypton. Who wrote that? Was it Loeb or Johns?
Definitely wasn't Johns, because Johns didn't really.
It was Loeb. It was Loeb, and the art was. Yep, it was Joe Kelly. I knew it was Joe Kelly and Ed McGuinness. Okay.
No, the Geoff Johns, like he has two, like between the New 50, or sorry, between John Byrne's Man of Steel and the New 52, we have two retcons on the origin. Now, one is, I think this is around the time that he started going insane. Mark Waid did Superman Birthright in two. Okay, but it wasn't that.
Okay, so super. Okay, so let's see here. Return to Krypton was April 2001.
Mm-hmm.
When was Superman Birthright?
2003.
Okay, super. That was okay. So it was Superman Birthright 2003. So when was the other reboot of Superman's origin?
Well, Johns wrote two tweaks that he did in Action Comics number 10, because I'm looking at the wiki here. Action Comics Annual number 10 from 2007, he did some retcons that made Krypton look a little more like the Richard Donner Superman, which is also around the same time that he was writing Superman with Richard Donner. And for those that don't know, Geoff Johns kind of got his start in the entertainment biz as being an intern and eventual assistant to Mr. Donner. And then they clarified that origin in Action Comics 850. And then he did the Secret Origin limited series, which came out in, I'm just looking up here, between September 09 and August of 2010, because there were some gaps in publishing around that time, which of all the origins, this, as much as I think Johns had a lot of input in writing this, this was definitely mandated to make it fall in line with the Smallville type of origin, where, you know, Clark meets Lex in Smallville when they're young and then grows up and eventually meets Lex again in Metropolis, and Lex just denies ever having been in Smallville.
Okay. So, okay. But the point is, there we have X amount of reboots and tweaks to Superman's origin in X amount of years. A 5-year period, about three, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, between 86 and 2010, so you got Man of Steel, you've got Return to Krypton isn't really an origin story as much as is. They go back to what they think is the Silver Age Krypton, turns out to be a fake Krypton. So, yeah, you've got three of them between 86 and 2010.
Well, it feels
so you guys are talking about Man of Steel, Superman Birthright, Secret Origin, and the New 52.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, oh, dear Lord, I have tried to make sense of the Superman origin in the New 52, and for what I know for certain, to make it as clear as Mississippi mud, is it's essentially the Golden Age origin. Up until they do DC Rebirth, and by this point, pre-52, like post-crisis, Superman and Lois have been folded into the timeline again, and they have that weird thing where New 52 Superman turns into a bunch of salt and his power soul or whatever merges with the previous Superman. And DC Rebirth, because of the shenanigans with Dr. Manhattan futzing with the timeline, by the end of that, which the storyline was called Doomsday Clock, they've tweaked the origin again, so now that Ma and Pa Kent are alive currently in the comics.
Ma and Pa Kent remember the fucking pre-crisis or the post-crisis universe. Like, it's fucking weird.
It's fucking garbage.
Because, what do you call it? Superboy. Kal-El returns. Connor Kent, but Kal-El returns. And Ma and Pa are the only people who fucking recognize him.
I bet they have to stare at him for like a minute before the magic happens and they remember Connor. It's like when Wally had Hal Jordan's Spectre wipe the memory of who he really is under the cowl from everyone. Then he had to go and take his mask off and everyone would remember. But yeah, you know, and I love the fact that when they brought Connor back, everyone forgot about the new 52 Superboy, who's like some weird cyborg clone, never talked about him again.
He's a clone of Jonathan Kent.
Yeah, something like that. And they even brought back in, it was revealed in a recent issue of Suicide Squad that the Superboy currently on the squad isn't Connor, it's Match, his bizarro clone Superboy from the Tom Grummett series back in the day. But as far as Superman origins go in the comics, like we all have our favorites, and there's tweaks here and there. I mean, I don't think it's the best, but I appreciate Geoff Johns' secret origin because, not because of the Smallville things, but there's little nods to like a lot of Silver Age references in there that I love and appreciate. Like, in the Superman and the Legion of Superheroes storyline that came out previous to this, he reintroduced the concept that Clark was Superboy, but only when he went to the future to hang out with the Legion. And it, you know, basically happened between ticks of the clock on his way home from school. You know, he would go to the future and fight the Fatal Five alongside Lightning Boy and Saturn Girl, and then they would get him back home in time for dinner. So I like stuff like that. And that Birthright, the only thing that I liked about Birthright, besides the art by Lionel Francis Yu, who's an artist I very much appreciate, was the final page where Lex was trying to create a communicator to talk to Krypton. And he gets knocked out of the way by Superman. Superman yells, "Mom, Dad, I made it." And then it flashes back to the collapse of Krypton. And Laura and Jor-El actually see that their son survived, and they die happy knowing that, you know, Krypton lives on like that. But aside from that, I don't think Superman Birthright's a waste of time to read, but it's a 12-issue miniseries, and the story could have been told in 6.
Well, I think the biggest problem with these sorts of stories is the investment go ahead, Red.
I was going to add on to what JT was talking about. Superman Birthright was, what do you call that? Wasn't so much like something Mark Waid wanted to do, it was something he was forced to do by Dan DiDio. Because they wanted to establish that Superman was the only survivor of Krypton. There's no Krypto, there's no fucking Supergirl, it's just Superman.
Yeah, because up until Infinite Crisis, that was the case. I mean, you had General Zod, but that was that General Zod from the alternate dimension where Superman killed him with their kryptonite, and then Matrix came over and eventually became the Angel Supergirl that we had for many years. And then after Infinite Crisis was when, you know, we get in Superman Batman, we get the Supergirl comes to Earth, and at this point, like, and again, they never mention Angel Supergirl again after that. Like, she never met this new one, as far as I'm aware. Krypto comes up, and that's eventually they find out that there was this female Kryptonian who landed on Earth, and she just lived out in the middle of bumblefuck nowhere and just wanted to be left alone and live her life. And then you get into the Geoff Johns stuff with where he brings back Zod and name of the evil Kryptonian woman?
Fiora? Fiora Lou or something.
Yeah. the one thing to keep in mind with the original edict was that edict went back way back before Dan DiDio. That was the original what's his name? The guy who ran DC Comics, the editor in chief back in 1984, post-crisis edict was Superman was the only survivor of Krypton. That was
it got fucking crazy. Like, they had Comet the Super Horse and fucking Bebo the fucking Super Monkey and all these fucking crazy side characters.
The Super Cat.
Yeah.
Yeah, all these crazy fucking other Kryptonian side characters that would just disappear into the ether and come back whenever they're needed.
Yeah.
Shit like that. It was just...
Yeah, and, like, there was... The edict was... there was only one survivor, Krypton, and... And to bring back any of those characters got kind of crazy and a little bit stupid.
It got really stupid on the animated series because they wanted to do Supergirl, and then DC was like, no, you can't fucking do that. We have this edict or Superman's the only survivor. Well, what if we make her from a different planet that's close to Krypton?
Well,
you can do that.
I kind of like that, where they made Krypton had a sister planet called Argos, and that kind of worked. That made sense that Krypton had they started terraforming planets on their own solar system. Argos got knocked out of orbit. That wasn't so bad of a logical stretch, Red.
To me, it was just fucking jumping through hoops. That's all it was. Like,
you're talking about jumping through hoops. Talk about fucking Peter David and his fucking degeneracy to get Comet in.
I can't.
Oh, the one with the female comedian who...
Oh, Jesus Christ. Don't finish that sentence. Please, for the love of God and everything holy, don't finish that sentence. And I mean for everything holy.
Gee, Ben. It's almost like when I ask you not to keep talking and you keep going. I almost feel the urge to keep going regardless.
Fuck you, do it.
Okay. No, I'm not going to finish that sentence because even in my head, I'm like, oh, dear God, why? No, I think it's the editor you're thinking about there in that mid-80s that might be the late great – I thought it was Mike Carlin. Great Carlini, as he was referred to in the editorial pages.
I'm 99% sure it was Denny O'Neill.
Yeah. No, it's stuff like that. Like I said, with when Johns and Donner were writing that whole like return of Krypton, where they brought Zod back and then Superman and Lois adopt his son, you know, and then that leads into like where Superman finally cracked the solution on how to free Argo from the Brainiac jar, and you get like the War of the Supermen, and eventually all those Kryptonians are, I forget if they were dead or just sucked into the Phantom Zone again. I mean, outside of the comics, one of my favorite origins, like there's TAS. It's not the best, but I always really liked how they did the origin in Lois and Clark. Say what you will about Dean Cain and his politics now. I really enjoyed his Superman. And, you know, it's like Red said with All-Star Superman, it's just simple and to the point, and we're off to the races. Also one of my favorite versions of Ma and Pa Kent in the history of Superman. Because, you know, my mother and my dad weren't exactly like that. Like, my mom, you know, she's does a lot of cross-stitch. She's not a huge artist, but... just the way they bickered back and forth like that just reminded me a lot of my parents.
Somebody save me.
Okay, first of all, having Bowduke and Christopher Reeve, Lana being the new Clark's parents, I think was pretty cool.
I kind of liked the Ma and Pa Kent from Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, actually.
Diabetes.
It was not fucking Wilford Brimley.
Eddie Jones is the actor's name. And let's try and find the actress that played Ma Kent. There was that one. I don't think they ever... You see it in the intro sequence to the Ruby Spears Superman cartoon, although they never really had, like, a dedicated episode to that. But kind of off to the side from the actual origin was how a lot of those episodes... Do you guys remember that series? How they had that Memories of Smallville at the end of an episode where you see, like, young Clark growing up and dealing with his powers and all that in Smallville like that?
I remember some of the Ruby Spears series, but before any fucking Americans correct me, because they've corrected me before, when I watched the Ruby Spears series, it would get canceled by baseball once in a while. And I'm not fucking American. I'm from a different country. So if it didn't get cut off for you, it doesn't mean it doesn't get cut off for other fucking countries.
I never watched the Ruby Spears series growing up.
I know Red's pain well. That happened to me a lot, too, although occasionally it was CFL when I caught it on the bounce. It was Kay Callens played Martha Kent and Lois and Clark. The Ruby Spears one was, like I said, never really had that. You had TAS. One of the new, was it Superman Man of Tomorrow, which is in the new cycle of DC animated movies, has the origin in there, because it's not a wholly part of the thing, but you know, you see the origin. It's, again, it's one of those things. The best thing about Superman's origin is simply get to the point so you can get on with the rest of the story. I mean, the whole movie is basically about Clark going to Metropolis and becoming Superman for the first time, but again, it's done simply. That also features Lobo, and he's voiced by the same actor who played Opie on Sons of Anarchy, and it was just perfect casting in that regard.
The best Lobo will always be Ray's brother.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Roundabout, it's way before Kal-El. I was almost going to call him Kal-El there for a second. Before Kal-El is ever born was the Krypton TV series on Sci-Fi. Did you guys ever watch that?
I watched two episodes and I was like, fuck this.
I like watching trash, so of course I watched the whole thing. But the idea as how it ties into Superman's origin is it's back when Zig-El, like his grandfather, so Jor-El's dad, is growing up, and it's very much like kind of the Man of Steel Krypton, but there's little bits of, like, say, Superman TAS Krypton, and about how he's just trying to deal with, like, class warfare and all that in this Krypton. But it's the whole idea is Brainiac has come back to the past from the future, like where Superman's been kicking his ass 24/7, and goes about trying to affect the timeline to prevent Kal-El's birth. And Zig-El is helped by Adam Strange, who somehow has figured out to use the Zeta Beam to send him back in time, like, to prevent all this. Anyway, it was a really interesting take on a pre-origin like this, and we never saw it through to the conclusion because it got canceled after two seasons. But the idea of a villain going back in time, and it's like the opposite version of Deadpool going back in time at the end of Deadpool 2 to kill baby Hitler. Like, why hasn't a supervillain tried this before? But and we talked about Superman Red Son. What do you guys think of that in terms of a Superman origin? Him landing in Soviet Russia like that?
Not a big fan of Superman Red Son.
I like Superman Red Son. It's a story about it's about nature versus nurture. Like, is Superman still Superman? If he isn't raised by Ma and Pa Kent? And in the story, he isn't fucking the Superman we know. But he eventually learns to be the Superman we know.
So to quote a line from the Doctor Who 50th anniversary special, He went home the long way around. A couple other Superman origins that I love from the comics, and it's coming, all three of these are out of the Elseworlds. You have Superman speeding bullets, which is, what if Thomas and Martha Wayne raised baby Kal-El and eventually becomes like this superpowered Batman? Lex Luthor gets turned into the Joker, and by the end of the story, he's become Superman with the, after meeting Lois and, you know, getting out of that funk. You have Superman Kal, which is set in medieval times where, you know, Superman becomes like this smith's son. His best friend, another apprentice, is like the Jimmy Olsen of this story. And by the end of it, you find out that this Jimmy is telling the origin of Kal and Excalibur, which has been forged out of the metal from his spacecraft, is being passed off to Jimmy's apprentice, Merlin. So I love how they folded Superman into the Arthurian lore like that. And I think my favorite out of the Elseworlds is Justice League The Nail. Have either of you guys read that one?
Oh, I fucking love The Nail.
Yeah.
The Nail is one of my favorite graphic novels, great favorite Elseworld stories ever. I think the art is gorgeous in The Nail.
It's Alan Davis.
And I think it's also... it's also one of the greatest stories, in my opinion, of just what would happen in a world without Superman that eventually gets a Superman, because it just tweaks everything just the right way and just the wrong way, in my opinion. Because you know how Marvel does What If, and What If, when Marvel does What If, and Red always says that What If is where they throw beginning writers, basically, hey, just, you know, here's a What If, just here, go over here, do a What If. And the idea is get your feet wet, get your hands dirty, and the end story of What If is culminatively, the world is not a better place because of this. You know, at the end of the day, it's good that the regular Marvel Universe happened the way it did, because, you know, the Watcher is showing you this is bad. The Nail kind of goes in that vein, but at the same time, there's a hopeful spirit in The Nail, and I like that. There's this great moment at the end of The Nail where you have Kal-El, who's raised by the Mennonites, and Bruce knows that he will be humanity's greatest savior, because he says he will be humanity's greatest savior. Bruce says that because he says he'll give anything to have his parents back, and Catwoman says, how do you know for sure? And he says, experience.
Yeah. And I love, one, like you said, there is that sense of hope, like you said, Ben, but for, you know, you look at like the poem that they use, you know, for want of a nail, the shoe was lost, how they keep going back to that throughout the series. I love the fact that the DC universe largely still happens the way we recognize it, minus Superman being there from the beginning, and then he's found by everyone at the end of the story, because Amish Mennonites, I don't know the culture if that's the same thing or not, but he shows up and he decides to go out in the world and use his powers for good, and, you know, he apologizes for leaving his family like that. But how it goes, like how the world happens without Superman, but the world still needs Superman. And eventually we get that.
Well, the difference between Mennonites and Amish is Amish are a colony of religious people who refuse to use technology.
Mm-hmm.
And Mennonites used technology, but they're a colony of religious people. And also drug smugglers.
Yeah. Just trying to think of any other comic, like, different takes on his origin. Because, like I said, there's a lot. And those are just three of my favorites from Elseworlds, folks. I highly recommend, you know, digging into that. Like I said, my favorite is just to go back to John Byrne's Superman. So much was built out of that origin for, like, the next, like, 25 years. And you know, as much as I enjoyed reading Secret Origin, I did enjoy Birthright initially, although it's definitely fallen out of favor with me. I never considered any of these other origins to be anything other than different takes on the origin. I mean, even though, like, I never thought Birthright was intended to replace Man of Steel, and they tried to retcon Man of Steel out and replace it with Secret Origin, but I think in talking to a lot of fans, like, no one considers either of those to be the definitive origin in the comics. I mean, a lot of people think, you know, Man of Steel, and like Red said, a lot of people love the origin from All-Star, like, and that's the great thing about having so many different takes, you know, because we still have Superman. It doesn't matter whether Ma and Pa Kent are alive, or if the entire petting zoo from the planet of Krypton comes to Earth eventually, you know, we still have Superman. You know, many origins, same destination. Now, outside of what our favorites are, you know, are there any other origins that I haven't mentioned that you guys like that, you know, kind of ring true for you boys?
Well, I think I said the definitive ones. I like the animated one because it fits with streamlining the best elements of the ones that I like. The original Post-Crisis ones is the first one that I've actually read in print. The one that really resonated with me the most was the one in the Secret Identity, the one that isn't technically the comic book one, but the one that I think is one of the definitive Superman graphic novels I've read. I can't really think of anything else other than the one that you mentioned, the excellent The Nail. I think a troll suggestion I'll give is fucking Frank Miller's fucking Superman Year One.
I don't know what you're talking about, Ben. I feel the same about Superman Year One the way you feel about Peter David's Comet. So the less said about that, the better.
Okay, you know what? I'll just say what about Superman Year One. It's people hate Superman Year One, but I've read it. It's like eating a quinoa salad. It's actually inoffensive. It's not bad, but it's not good. It's just there. It's Frank Miller trying to be inoffensive, which kind of in itself is kind of offensive. It's Superman trying to be like an upstanding young man, but at the same time doing things that is like right on the edge of trying to offend you, but at the same time being inoffensive at the same time. Like Superman, he's trying to, like, growing up, he signs up to be in the Navy. Oh, he's trying to be a Navy SEAL. And then all of a sudden you're like, hey, Superman shouldn't be a soldier. And then it's like, why not? He's trying to be an upstanding young man. It's like, and all of a sudden people are trying to be, and it's like, he doesn't actually kill anybody. In fact, he's trying to stop his SEAL team from killing people. It's like, and people are just trying to, like, stumble on their words. And then all of a sudden he starts dating a mermaid, Lori Lamaris. It's like, people are trying to be like, well, why isn't he dating Lois Lane? And people are like, and people are just stumbling on their words. It's like he's trying to, like, like trying to be inoffensive and offensive at the same time. It's weird. It's weird and at the same time not weird. It's just a like blasé Frank Miller book that's inoffensive and offensive at the same time, and it's drawn by John Romita Jr. like phoning it in.
So you're telling me Wonder Woman doesn't show up drawn like a whore?
Like, Wonder Woman is drawn there by John Romita Jr. not giving a damn. So it's like she's not even hot. So I don't know what you want from me.
Okay. One origin in the comics that I was just looking here on the wiki that I kind of forgot about. Do you guys remember the Tangent comics from the late 90s? Where... those comics, if you don't haven't heard about those before, folks, Tangent Comics was based on the idea they took the name of a character and spun out a whole new something new on that. It's similar to what they did with when they created Barry Allen and Hal Jordan in the Silver Age of comics. Like, you take the name of the Flash and the idea of their powers and run with it. So you have characters like the Atom, who isn't, you know, the scientist that shrinks small. He's this atomic powered, you know, Superman type character, or the Sea Devils, who are this race of anthropomorphic fish creatures that were created after Florida was nuked out of existence during the Cuban Missile Crisis in the 60s, because that actually happened in this world. So the Superman in this world is a black man named Harvey Dent, who was his parents were part of this Tuskegee Airmen style experiment in the past that resulted in Harvey eventually becoming, once his powers activate, he becomes like the next evolution of human. And he starts getting all these really weird, like, superpowers, and he can do everything with his mind. And years after that, when they revisited that in the 2000s, the power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, and he becomes like this dictator on his earth. Now, I just kind of like that as an origin, see, you know, just something completely off base, and it's not Clark Kent or anything like that. And if you like alternate takes on comics, I highly recommend that entire line. And the other one I was thinking about, have you guys ever read any of the DC Earth One graphic novels?
No, I know garbage when I see it.
I read the Teen Titans, and I'm currently reading Batman.
What do you think of the Batman, Red?
It's no secret that I think Batman's a fucking joke, and he's written as a joke in this fucking comic, and I love it.
Yeah, they got that. The Superman Year One just it gets more into the trouble Clark has trying to be human without being human, and there's a lot of they really dig into more of the xenophobia of, you know, ordinary people towards Superman, which it's not done to the point that, you know, there are torches and pitchforks coming after him, but it's something that I always thought was something that, why haven't they done this more in the comics? Because it's not in the comics, a lot of times it seems like everyone, oh, it's man in a red and blue costume can fly. Well, I feel safe, and there are, why aren't there more people? Like, the fuck is that? So,
well, also, you just remind me of one origin that I want to bring up.
Okay.
JMS wrote one. I forgot the name of it. And in this origin story, I'm remembering beats of it where Superman steals Batman's cape. And he starts flying around with Batman's cape for a while.
JMS did not write that. You're talking about Max Landon wrote that. And that is fucking Superman, what do you call it? American
Alien?
American Alien.
Okay. Well, I'm mixing up with another one that I know JMS wrote, where basically Superman fights an alien. Fights a big bad alien, and the military refuses to help him and gets his ass kicked. And finally, he you know, he finally is able to beat this alien, and Superman finally talks to the press. He talks to the press. He says, "You know what? I tried to appeal to your humanity, tried to appeal to the good part of you. So I'm going to appeal to your sense of self-preservation, because if I'm dead, what's going to stop them from killing you?"
Now, one of the final ones here that I wanted to mention, just because I love the humor mixed in this, because it's art by John Byrne, and it was written by my favorite member of Monty Python, John Cleese, and that's Superman True Grit.
Oh, jeez.
And it's basically like Kal-El lands in England instead of America, and quoting the wiki here, "Being raised stereotypically British includes belief in the philosophy, what would the neighbors think?" And it's about Colin. It's like, again, with that philosophy, it's him like hiding his powers, you know, trying to live a normal life. And essentially, he has to come up with this garish, foppish looking costume when he goes out as Superman, because his parents hate it whenever he uses any of the powers, and they're just so ashamed of him that he would go out, you know, prancing around like that. It's a lot of fun, and I highly recommend that one, too. You know, I want to say there's more. Like, there's a lot more origins out there, folks. Like, I looked at the DC fandom wiki for Superman origins. Just for single issues between 1938 and 2017, there's almost a dozen just single issues of Superman comics that are wholly dedicated to his origin. Between 1970 and 1981, there are four issues alone, which all of them, I am sure, tell the story just a little bit differently. So, I mean, there's more than enough choices out there for you to go out and find your own favorite origin of Superman. I think one that everyone loves, just regardless of who you are, is the Christopher Reeves movies.
Absolutely.
And some David people then. Yeah. You had to bring that one up, didn't you, Red? I don't know. You know, we mentioned Smallville before, but what do you guys think overall of how they handled 10 seasons of Clark becoming Superman like that?
Long in the fucking tooth. Like, in my opinion, Smallville should have ended at, like, season 3. He should have been Superman at season 3. Yeah. Like, as soon as he graduated high school.
Yep.
But no, it just kept going and going. I'm the Blur. I'm the mysterious person. Blah, blah, blah. I'm Superman, but I'm not Superman.
The Blue Blur.
The Red Blue Blur. And I mean, yeah, it's definitely something. I would have maybe gone 5 seasons, like stretch out high school, have him go to college a little bit. Like, I love the fact, like, in terms of the origin along the way, how Brainiac, you know, came and became his college professor for a while in the series. I always loved, like, the whole batshit insane comic book idea of that. But, you know, the whole using his origin to see the crypto mutant freak of the week for the first couple of years. After like the first few episodes, I was over that. But, you know, like I said before, having John Schneider and Annette O'Toole play, I think, one of the best versions, not my favorite version of Ma and Pa, but definitely one of the best versions of Ma and Pa Kent. And in terms of incorporating Pa Kent's death, like how they actually had him, they didn't have him get run over, they didn't have him die by a bullet from like Lionel Luthor's gun. Like, John Schneider's character died of a heart attack, which I think is the only way Pa Kent should die in the comics, you know, to teach Clark that lesson that you can't save everybody. So, where do you guys stand on Clark and Lex being friends as kids?
They drew that long in the tooth way too much. Like, they had way too many conversations in the first 4 or 5 seasons of Gee, Clark, it's way nice we're friends. It'd be way awkward if we were enemies later on, wouldn't it? Like, over and over and over again. Jesus fucking Christ, there's foreshadowing, and then there's the
fucking... It got so bad that the actor playing Lex is like, I can't take this anymore, I fucking quit.
Yes. Like...
Fine, you're a villain now.
Like, they kept on doing it. Like it wasn't even subtext anymore, it wasn't even text anymore, it was fucking bold lettering.
Yeah, I mean... It's not like you can't do Lex Luthor as being human underneath all his various psychoses and shit, but yeah, they dragged it out too long. Michael Rosenbaum was a great Lex.
There's no dispute about that, but the fact that you could have fucking Sir Laurence Olivier reading that dialogue, but it's still garbage.
Well, you're not wrong. No. John Byrne's still my favorite.
As shitty as Smallville is, there are some good episodes that I enjoyed, like fucking the Flash episode when he first showed up, but eventually that got long in the tooth too.
Yeah, I mean, it's the origin of a lot of the characters they brought in there, like, that all has to be patterned after this. Like, it takes the longest time for most of the heroes that are introduced to become, you know, who they're going to be. Like Aquaman, you know, they introduced him, I think, in like season 3 or 4. Alan, was it Rickson? I forget how you pronounce his last name. And he didn't actually become like King of the Seven Seas Aquaman until, I think it was during the last season where they introduced like DC's version of the superhero or the Vigilante Registration Act. And he's almost taken out by Deathstroke, who in this series is Colonel Ty from the new Battlestar Galactica. But the first time he shows up, he's almost cooked to death by Lex Luthor. So what are you going to do? I'm just looking at some pages I found online of Superman Year One, just like, dear God, why?
It's exactly what I described. Why did you not believe me?
The thing is, I've read Superman Year One. I forgot about it until Ben started talking about it.
It's exactly what I described. Like, I was extremely fair.
It's not as fucking bad as you say.
It's bland.
It's Frank Miller trying to write the golden age history of Superman. Except there's no Superboy. So he's trying to make a young 20-year-old Clark go through to the adventures of Superboy, which is fucking ridiculous.
Cringy?
Yeah.
Okay, here's the thing. What do you guys think is the worst origin of Superman as we kind of start to wrap up here?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I did not care for New 52.
That's a pretty broad statement, Ben.
I did not care for
New 52 Superman, I get you.
I did not care for the New 52 origin. I did not care for...
How about you, Red?
I don't like the Man of Steel fucking origin. Not like the movie? Not the comic. I mean the movie.
Yeah,
that's probably the worst take on the fucking origin ever, where the Kryptonians live on fucking the Avatar planet. And apparently they sentence people to prison by putting them in dicks, which go into a giant dick, which go into the dick dimension.
Through a giant space vagina.
Yes.
Okay, I agree about that one.
Yeah. I think I said it before, like...
And the fucking Kryptonians wear fences on their heads.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck?
No, I have to agree with you there, Red. I think the worst origin is Man of Steel. Like I said earlier, like aside from that last page in Birthright, that's up there too on the list of bad origins. Oh dear God. You know what we have to do for the next episode?
What?
Batman Origins.
Agreed.
It's always the same. I'm sick of saying fucking Martha and Thomas can't get shot in the fucking face, right?
To be honest, I think the only time Thomas was ever shot in the face was at the beginning of BVS. You know, although he was played by Papa Winchester, so you think he would have been able to take a bullet.
Oh, he was fucking Negan. He was being, all right, all right, all right.
God.
All right, Joe Chillin's time. He would have. Negan would have fucking kicked Joe Chill's ass.
Anyways, all right, I think we've talked this topic out. This year's Ben.
JP from Saskatoon.
Reading.
We're saying goodnight.
So long.
Excelsior.